Male Jackson. Male? Seriously? Male. Okay. Well, that should have been a good giveaway right there. Male Jax has accumulated title after title in girls' high school track. Male. You know, how come some... no, I'm just going to leave that there. His dominance... Notice I don't give him the courtesy of calling him a her. His dominance in girls' sports has prompted renewed calls for legislation both at the state and national level to protect the integrity and sanctity of women's and girls' sports. With us now to discuss the ongoing efforts to restore fairness to women's and girls' sports is Caitlin Wheeler. She is a former NCAA swimmer, University of Kentucky athlete, and teammate of Riley Gaines. You'll remember Riley. We've had her on this show a number of times. Caitlin is among the athletes suing the NCAA for violating her Title IX rights. Caitlin, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. And, you know, who would have thought back, you know, a couple of years ago when Riley and I first started having this conversation that we'd be still litigating this issue, that this lawsuit stems from the January 2022 ruling by the NCAA Board of Governors that allows transgender athletes to compete in the category of their affirmed gender on a sport-by-sport basis. The NCAA says the ruling is, quote, preserving the opportunity for transgender students while balancing fairness, inclusion, and safety. We're going to talk about that next one there, safety, but... Caitlin, the lawsuit accuses the NCAA of violating your Title IX rights by allowing University of Pennsylvania swimmer Leah Thomas, a biological male, to participate in the 2022 national championships, correct?
Correct. I mean, it has. You know, the bottom line is the NCAA has failed us as female athletes. Their most basic job is to protect fairness and safety, as you said, of its athletes, and really to uphold Title IX, and it has failed miserably. Really, these past couple of years, we've seen multiple instances of males who are identifying as women going into women's sports. I mean, it's the same story over and over again.
Right.
Going into women's sports, it's a mediocre male going into women's sports and absolutely dominating. And it's really sad what we've seen happen. And so the NCAA has obviously actively and openly discriminated against women on the basis of their sex, which means they are in direct violation of Title IX.
You know, I love their statement here, preserving the opportunity while balancing fairness, inclusion, and safety. We can't really debate inclusion. Okay, we'll give them that one. But I would love to see how they argue fairness when you look at the genetic, the scientific, the pure just, I mean, size. I mean, we've all seen the pictures on the podium with Riley and Leah and all these other, I mean, heck, I just saw one the other day of a track athlete who was easily 2 feet taller than his female competitors. How do they look at that and say that balances fairness?
Right, exactly. You make some really good points there. I mean, aside from the physiological differences between men and women, because there are.
Bone density, muscle mass, yeah, all of that, yeah.
Yes, yeah. There's so many physiological factors at play, hormone levels, but like bone density, as you said, larger heart muscles. Aside from all of that, you know, you talk about the word inclusivity, which is like a very virtuous word. They want to throw a lot of virtuous words at us. And, you know, it's, you know, we need to be inclusive. We need to be accepting of these males who are identifying as females. But really, that's damaging to sports, specifically in all areas as well. You know, sororities, there's Boy Scouts who are now allowing women into Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts who are allowing boys into their Girl Scouts. It's just crazy. And these boundaries, these really different differences have been set up to be exclusive, not to be inclusive to all. There's a reason for that. And so to label it as inclusive is really just destructive of the whole system itself.
Well, and I love that last one is the safety for all who compete. How many times do female athletes have to have their faces busted in by a volleyball or be hurt in the course of competition before they accept the absolute ridiculous notion that this is not safe?
Yeah, it's not safe. And I have parents calling me all the time in tears, unsure of what to do. Like, how do they tell their daughters that they can't play their sports anymore because they're afraid that they're going to, you know, be hurt? Or, you know, for Peyton McNabb's example, she has permanent brain damage from being struck in the head by a volleyball that was hit by a male opponent. There was a female field hockey player who had her teeth knocked out by a puck that was smacked by a male opponent on the opposing team. It's not only unfair, it's not only not equal or fair to women, but it's unsafe for us as well.
Well, and we're not only talking about safety on the field. There's also the issue, I remember when Riley and I talked the last time, there's the issue of safety in the locker room. I mean, she explained how awkward it is. You've experienced this in the dressing room when she said it takes up to 15 minutes to put on, the swimsuits.
Right.
And that's a safety issue in and of itself.
It sure is. It sure is, because you're right. It's not just happening in sports, but it's happening in spaces. We're seeing this in public school systems. We're seeing it in all of these different organizations like Planet Fitness, the YMCA.
Right.
We're seeing men go in into women's areas of sanctuary, really, and take away like that safety that women are supposed to feel going into those environments. You know, at the NCAA meet, while I was changing, you know, fully exposed, and to turn around and see a 6'4" man, a mere 10 feet from me, changing and exposing himself, you know, that's not something we were prepared for. That's not something that we were asked for our consent or forewarned about. So I really felt like humiliated and violated and stuff. But I think most of all, I felt betrayed by an organization that I had up until that moment really truly believed had our best interests at heart, because, you know, that's what they claimed to be promotive of Title IX and women and all of our opportunities. You know, I was completely caught off guard by that, because that's when I really started to question, you know, maybe what the NCAA and these other organizations, maybe what they're doing isn't right. You know, maybe we should start asking those questions. Do they really have our best interests at heart, or what they're doing really right? And they want to act like we're asking for so much, but really we're not. We're asking for the bare minimum. And really, if our leaders are still unwilling to do the right thing, then I suggest they resign from their jobs immediately so that we can put people in leadership who will make the right call, which is really just protecting women and children at the same time.
Yeah, no, you're asking for common sense, if you ask me. But, you know, again, this is, we're not right now, unfortunately, we're not in a culture that supports common sense. We're talking with Caitlin Wheeler. She's an ambassador for the Riley Gaines Center. In response to your lawsuit, a nonprofit LGBTQ, you know, alphabet mafia group, one of these athletic advocacy groups said, quote, "This lawsuit is the latest effort to eliminate the ability of transgender athletes to exist in the same spaces as cisgender athletes and to erode the autonomy of sports governing bodies to set, quote, evidence-based eligibility criteria as they see fit." There's a lot to dissect there, Caitlin. But let me just ask, does your lawsuit in any way prohibit trans individuals from existing? I wasn't aware that it did that.
You know, this is in no way anti-anything.
Right.
What I would say is, you know, what about women? Don't women deserve equal opportunity, fairness, and a right to privacy? You know, this lawsuit isn't about hurting anyone or preventing anyone from competing in sports. You know, there is a place for trans people to compete in sports. You know, I'm a firm believer in sports. I've done sports for 18 years of my life, for as long as I can remember. I think everyone should do sports, honestly. But this isn't about taking away those opportunities. There is a place for people to compete, and that is competing in the category in the sex in which you were born. There's the male category. If you were born with XY chromosomes, you compete in the male category. If you were born with XX chromosomes, you compete in the female category. But this is about helping women. This lawsuit is about helping the women who have been hurt and impacted and preventing it from happening in the future. It's about ensuring fairness, equality, and a safe playing field. And I really think that that's something just about everyone should want.
Well, and when they talk about evidence-based eligibility criteria, you know, my first thought is, what evidence? What science? I mean, if they were relying on science, they, you know, The guy's got junk. At that point, then he plays with other guys with junk. I mean, it seems, you know, and I'm not saying that we want to inspect people's, because that's another, you know, red herring that they throw out there. But come on, you know, this is, it's such common sense. And yet they throw out these buzzwords, and that you're trying to erode the autonomy, and that you want transgender athletes no longer to exist. It has nothing to do with that. This is just about safety and security and ensuring an equal playing field, which clearly having a 6 foot tall guy competing with 5 foot tall women is not equal playing field.
Right. And you said it so beautifully. You know, it's a common sense issue. And unfortunately, it's become so politicized.
Right.
And that's very intentional, because they don't want you to see common sense and truth in this issue. They don't want you to be unified in any sort of way, because it's all about being divisive. And so really, I see what's at stake here. I know what will happen if we don't do something. Obviously, we're seeing that play out. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and say that I want to be here and I want to be having to say that men and women are different. It's crazy that we have to sit here and say that. But, you know, it's necessary. And I think really our country is desperate for truth to be spoken. And so I think that's just like really what God has called on my heart and many of these other girls who are on this lawsuit. You know, we don't want to have to be here. This shouldn't be our job. But unfortunately, our leadership, the NCAA, the Biden administration, our current leaders are failing us. And so really they forced our hand. And so I'm really excited, though, to be seeing change. We're definitely seeing the tide start to turn.
I'm glad to hear that. Where does the lawsuit stand now? And are you optimistic about the outcome?
Yeah. So the lawsuit is still, obviously, this could take quite some time to kind of penned out. But NCAA responded, and they're not willing to settle or anything yet, but I think that's a good thing. We're hoping that it will go up to the Supreme Court, and no matter what happens at the Supreme Court, because this is the first case of its kind, whatever happens, it will become law. And so that will either be a good thing for us, which I hope it is. I hope we win, and I definitely think we should, because I believe the common sense and truth prevails in the end. But this will just set a baseline for the future, and either preventing this from happening again, or obviously we need to get some leaders in there who won't allow that to happen again or continue to happen. So it's going to take some time, but we're still fighting and still definitely advocating for this.
Well, Caitlin, if folks want to connect with you, they can find you on X at Wheeler Caitlin. I follow you on X. I encourage my listeners to do the same. If they want to connect with the Riley Gaines Center, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, you can go to the RileyGainesCenter.org, or if you're interested in the lawsuit and would like to find ways to support and contribute, you can go to TakeOnTheNCAA.com and either sign our petition or find ways to give on there.
I really appreciate you, Caitlin. Thank you for what you're doing. Carry on the fight. We need women like you to be out there pushing back and just speaking truth to their lack of science. So carry on what you're doing, my friend.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
When the special session begins Tuesday, lawmakers plan to bring forward a proposal modifying the state's Star Bond program to help Kansas attract a professional sports team like the Chiefs and Royals to move to Kansas. Precise details are still being rolled out and ironed out, but backers of state incentives have pointed to the possibility of upwards of $700 million in supercharged sales tax and revenue bonds, Star Bonds, to roll out this program, to enable this program. Star Bonds, for those of you who are unfamiliar with them, are financing tools that allow Kansas municipalities to issue bonds to finance the development of major commercial entertainment and tourism projects. The bonds are then paid off through the sales tax revenue generated by the development. This upwards of $1 billion project has drawn a lot of interest and speculation, and I wanted to bring you a complete picture of the issue, especially considering it carries such a hefty price tag. So joining us now to tell us why he is in favor of the Starbond proposal is someone who needs very little introduction. He's the former governor of the state of Kansas, former lieutenant governor of the state of Kansas. He is a longtime friend of the show, Governor Jeff Collier. Governor, thank you for joining us this evening, and happy Father's Day, my friend.
You know, I've had a wonderful Father's Day, yes, and I hope you've had a great day as well, my friend.
I have, and let me, before we get into this, let me also thank, it's the first time you and I have had a chance to talk. You endorsed me in my run for the House. It meant a lot to me. That carries a lot of weight. You know, to have a governor endorse you in a race, it meant a lot to me, and I really appreciated that, and I wanted to thank you for that. So thank you again for that, my friend.
Oh, no, man, you'd be great, okay? I've known you when you were a representative before, and, you know, you're serving our community. I think the public service that you do through this show is fantastic. You know, we like using your brain, and, you know, Kansans are lucky to have you, my friend.
Well, thank you, and you know, when and if you decide to throw your hat back in the ring for public service, we'll be lucky to have you back, so... Now that we're done with the Mutual Admiration Society, tell me, Doc, why do you support this plan? Why do you think, because you're a fiscal conservative, why do you support this?
Yeah, you know, I have been a fierce conservative my entire career. I started out working for Ronald Reagan. And so it's important that, you know, we make sure we put the taxpayers first. We try to grow our economy. And we try to make things work best for our communities, and especially in the long run. Now, I believe, you know, we should pay our bills, that, you know, the private sector can do things better than the governmental sector. And, you know, as a Kansan, I want to make sure that if we are going to have the Chiefs come over to Kansas, that there's a good way of doing that, not that relies on new taxes or anything like that. How it works is, right now, the state of Missouri, voters in the state of Missouri voted down a tax increase across all of Jackson County. Kansas has a unique mechanism that would pay for part of the stadium. What that is, it's called a star bond. And what a star bond is, it's a bond that's issued by the local government. It's not a local government obligation. It's just tied to new sales taxes in the area around that facility. That's how we built the NASCAR racetrack. And so this is a way of doing something that has no obligation to the state of Kansas or to Wyandotte County or Johnson County, wherever it's built here. But what it does do is it makes sure that we get private development to do this. And I'll tell you, it's important that we keep the Chiefs here. You know, as a governor, you know, I brought people like you know, Warren Buffett, you know, to come to Kansas and build a facility in Lenexa. But I'll tell you, it was hard getting people and investors from, you know, the East Coast and the West Coast to look at Kansas. But if you have the Chiefs here, every Sunday they're going to see Kansas is a happening place, that this is a great place not only to raise a family and not only a great place to have a business, but things are happening here. And so I think there's a lot of advantages for the state that helps put us on the map, lets us put our best foot forward.
Governor, what do you say to those critics of the plan who argue, one of which is a sponsor of the show, but that's nothing to do with this. But what do you say to those critics who argue that this is a sweetheart deal or using government power to benefit one business at the expense of others?
Look, what we're talking about is something that is not a total free market sort of thing. Believe me, we all know that baseball teams and football teams are not free market entities. They are private sector entities, and other states will bid for them. And believe me, they will bid a whole lot more money than we will. But what's interesting in this is if you let the private sector build it, just like they did NASCAR, just like the private sector built the terminal in Kansas City at the Kansas City Airport, private sector takes a better job of it. You know, they'll take better care of it than cities do or government does. And so this is a way to make sure that we're doing something. It has a big public good. But fortunately, the taxpayers don't have to pay for it. I think that's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there is an argument to be said that if you don't go to the game, you don't pay. I mean, my wife and I are a perfect example. We've never been to the Speedway, so it's not costing us anything for those bonds, for example. And I mean, it's a good example. We're talking with Governor Jeff Collier. Governor, let me ask you, there have been some who have speculated that some, you know, in this stadium district are concerned that wherever it may be, that residential property values around a stadium star bond district might then go up because obviously you've got all this development around it. So therefore, it would put at risk folks who are on lower or fixed incomes and might then become priced out of their own neighborhoods because of increased property valuations, things like that, stuff that we're seeing all the time. Is that a concern? Are you worried at all about how this development might affect residential property values?
Well, it might improve residential property values. That's a good thing. What's a bad thing is when politicians go and use that to tax people out of their homes.
That's true.
And I think you just had that conversation just a minute ago.
Yeah, we did.
But, you know, here's the other thing, though, is, you know, already the Kansas Speedway pays property taxes. Already the Sporting KC, pays property taxes. This is something where they will, you know, it will be have a property tax base. And that's a way of adding additional funds in order to drive down the cost for individuals.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that you were concerned about the Chiefs maybe, you know, moving. If Kansas doesn't do this, if Missouri doesn't find some kind of a counteroffer, are you concerned at all that the Chiefs might move? I'm sure there are markets in Texas or other states that would try and entice them away. Is that a real concern to you?
Oh, absolutely it is. A few years ago, I was visiting with a major political leader from another state, and I'll leave it at that. But in the course of the conversation, it was like, do you think the Royals would be willing to leave Kansas City? Because we would make them an offer they can't refuse.
And you go, I think I've heard that line somewhere before.
It's a Godfather thing, you know? But here's the thing is other cities are going to be out there. Okay. Kansas City, you know, this is something that is important to our image. And when the team left St. Louis a few years ago, when that team, the city of St. Louis actually sued because they said they were losing $100 million in revenue every single year. You know, this provides additional revenue to us. And you know, other cities, you know, and it's no surprise, you know, it's Utah, it is Texas, it's Tennessee, it's Florida, you know, all of these places, they're trying to get an expansion team. And, you know, wow, what if you could buy the two-time world champions, soon to be three-time world champions?
Hey.
NFL. Hey. Oh, you and your Broncos thing, you know? But this is a worldwide image. I've been around the Chiefs ownership and the Royals ownership. They love Kansas City. They want to stay here. Let's not let somebody give them an offer they can't refuse.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said about that. Governor, you and I both know we served in Topeka together, albeit on different floors. Some of my former colleagues have expressed their concerns to me, and they've asked what I would do if I were, you know, how would I vote? And they've asked my own, and I'm trying to really stay neutral on this deal. I will tell you that the one thing that has concerned me about this is the process. And, you know, I never have liked doing things in a special session. I hate the fact that this seems kind of rushed. That they're, you know, doing it in one day as opposed to having extensive hearings, maybe doing an interim committee and allowing the public to come in and have extensive hearings in the Capitol, maybe a 2-day, you know, a day for proponents, a day for opponents, letting the public really get their teeth into this. Why the rush? Why can't they wait until January and do this through a regular order?
Well, a couple of things. One is, don't let another city make them an offer they can't refuse. And believe me, the sharks are circling out there. But here's the thing: this is not the end of this discussion. There is a large process in which there is lots of opportunity for the public to first talk to your state legislators right now. This is a tweak of the general legislation. So it's not starting up a whole new thing. But then there's a big process. So the local government, you know, whatever county or city it is, they've got to first approve a star bond district. And they also have to then go to the Secretary of Commerce. And so once the district is created and the public has lots of opportunities to talk about that, then you can consider the project. Now, the project then has to have a complete feasibility study done by a third, done by a third party. It's got to contain a lot of different findings, and it has to match up, with sales tax revenues, and that the project actually pencils out. They have to have lots of input on that.
Okay.
So after that study is completed, though, then you get to share that. Everybody gets to see that. Okay, and then the project needs to go and be reviewed once again by the Secretary of Commerce. It has to be reviewed by the local governments that issues it. And then finally, the bonds themselves have to be evaluated by the investors that buy these on Wall Street. So there's a big process. We're only at the beginning of that process.
Okay, so there's a lot more to come here, and if folks are interested, if they want information, they can visit scoopandscoreks.com, correct?
That's right, and they're providing some up-to-date information and trying to, set the record straight.
Governor, I appreciate you, my friend, as always, and if you've got an announcement coming anytime soon, you make sure you call me, we'll put you on the show, all right, brother?
Oh, my best announcement was my daughters came home, for Father's Day. So I am a happy, happy dad.
Any other imminent announcements, call me. We'll put you on. All right, brother?
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. With us now to continue the conversation on the proposed Chiefs-Royals star bond proposal is Vance Ginn. Vance is the founder and president of Ginn Economic Consulting. He previously served as the White House's Office of Management and Budget, as the Associate Director for Economic Policy from June of 2019 through May of 2020 under President Trump. Vance, thank you for joining us this evening. Happy Father's Day. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
Hi, John. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you, and happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you, sir. So you are opposed to the star bond proposals that are up for consideration on Tuesday. Why?
Well, I think there's, of course, there's a lot of interest in this topic, and you have two great teams, and you have a great interest in the community and everything else, and I certainly empathize with what's going on. But the problem is when you look at the facts of what's happened in other places when star bonds have been used, other states have tried these sort of things, it just doesn't work out as planned to have the number of, people, employees that they bring on and hirings or the community benefits longer term. You're talking about a star bond here for sales tax and revenue to last 30 years. There's a lot of changes that happen over the course of just 5 years, much less 30 years. And so this puts a huge burden on the community at a time when, these private institutions should do things on their own instead of asking taxpayers to put the bill in the process. And so I think this is one of those things where you have the seen, you have the shiny stadium and everything, but the unseen is that there's much that's to be wanted otherwise for people across the state of Kansas, and in particular in the location of where the stadium is. So I think this is not a good situation.
Some people have claimed that Kansas taxpayers will be on the hook for this project. Now, other than obviously the people who pay sales tax, but that's not necessarily Kansas taxpayers. That's anybody who would visit the district. But just to make sure, star bonds do not count against a local government's debt limit, nor do they affect its bond rating, correct?
Correct. That's right. Yeah, because it's just to pay off the project within that district that's been determined by the TIF, the Tax Increment Financing Zone, that they'll put in for, let's say, the Kansas City Chiefs move over, you know, across the border, and then they have this. They have the stadium there and everything. They'll make the district, the zone, a little bit larger than that because they're trying to reap the benefits. Because the idea here, John, is that you have this stadium and then it's going to bring other businesses along, and then they can get the sales tax to pay off the bond over the course of that 30 years. And so that's where the situation really is here for the star bond.
And another question that I've heard, some of the objections, people worry that local governments would need to keep property taxes or sales tax rates elevated or hike them even higher to account for infrastructure needs or things that are related to the Star Bond project. And I should note, however, that these Star Bonds are unique to Kansas. No other states have Star Bonds. So, but I mean, would local governments in any way be required to fund this? This is strictly up to the bondholders, right?
Well, it is up to the bondholders. Now, there could be spillover effects that happen in communities around that location for potentially, you know, increases in value, also different services that could be provided and things of that nature. But for this particular area, with that tax increment financing zone, there would not be additional services or costs from that. And there are other states that do tax increment financing, they don't call it a star bond necessarily, but they'll put it in place. Like in Oklahoma, for example, they do this, and they'll try to say that they pay it off within a certain amount of time.
Like a TIF district.
There's no other increase. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So they're a little bit different, but I think even with those, there is an increase in cost over time. And so to me, it's not only about the cost for the individuals and the bondholders that's redirecting resources that could go into the area to this particular bond. But it's also for the cost of not just today, but over time. I mean, you have over the next 30 years, what other things could go into that area compared with the new stadium itself. And those are things that I think really need to look at. And the other thing too is the precedence that it sets. Why shouldn't every business in that community get some sort of bond, some sort of handout from the government or taxpayers and everything else?
That's true. I imagine Dr. Collier would tell you, well, that every other business isn't the Kansas City Chiefs and the Royals, but
sure.
I'm sure. But we're talking with Vance Ginn, founder and president of Ginn Economic Consulting. When I was talking with Dr. Collier, I mentioned the Kansas Speedway. It's the NASCAR track. You know, and I mentioned that my wife and I have never been to the Speedway, which, by the way, if anybody's got tickets, you're welcome to, you know, I'll take them, but we've never been there. So therefore we're not paying for that Star Bond project. What do you say to those who favor the project and then argue that Star Bonds are the ultimate user pay model for financing infrastructure because sales tax generated within the district are utilized to retire the Star Bonds? You don't go, you don't pay.
Yeah, so I mean that's an interesting concept, and I think that there's a user fee argument as an economist. That's something I've looked into, but I think something like this, and I think going back to your point with Dr. Collier, is that yes, it's the Kansas City Chiefs, but I would say yes, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. They have multi-billion dollars in revenue.
That's true.
They pay for this themselves, not from on the back of taxpayers or some sort of government financing situation. That's not, in my view, that's not the role of government. This is industrial policy or industrial planning or government planning from a top-down approach compared with allowing the marketplace to work. And so not every business is the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's exactly right. They don't have the type of revenue. So why should it be on the back of taxpayers in the process? This is, you know, and so I think there's a lot of concern about that from, you know, the Kansas Policy Institute, where I'm a senior fellow at, and others are in the community are really concerned about this.
I will grant you that. And you're right, because they could clearly afford it. It's not like the Chiefs and Royals couldn't afford to build their own stadium. I'm sure,
right.
Again, I'm sure that the proponents would argue, well, if Texas is going to build them a stadium, if we don't want to lose them, and that's the nature of some of this being competitive in today's climate. You know, sometimes you have to, they would argue that sometimes you have to incentivize an entity to stay. What do you say to those who say that, you know, it dramatically raises our national tourism? I mean, Dr. Collier made that point that it would, you know, raise our national tourism and economic development profile. But not only that, I've spoken to many legislators who point to the positive fiscal effects, including areas like the $30 to $40 million in new income taxes that would be collected annually. I mean, shoot, if the Chiefs move to Kansas, Patty Mahomes, you know, income taxes are going to Kansas now. So, I mean, and every player that comes to play a game at the Chiefs, when he plays a game in Kansas, we're taxing his income. So all that new income comes to Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things in that, but just try to unpack it a little bit. Kansas doesn't have a revenue problem. It has a spending problem.
Oh, so, I agree with you there. Yeah, preaching to the choir, brother.
Yeah,
you are preaching to the choir.
So I don't want to go down that route too much because I think that's a slippery slope if we need to bring in more revenue. You know what I mean?
We don't. We do not need new revenue.
But your other point is really key to this is competition. I believe strongly in federalism. And so when you have states being able to compete, I think that's really important. However, when they start competing with handouts, and a lot of the states are doing this nowadays. Florida is one of the only ones that decided not to do this a few years ago. But they had some other agreements that, you know, years ago that they were working with. But when you start handing out money, then it's like, okay, well, what are you giving up in the process?
Right.
There still is other things that they could be using within that area that wouldn't necessarily go to the Kansas City Chiefs. And yes, the Kansas City Chiefs are on fire right now, and they're great. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, I'm a Texas Tech Red Raider is where I went, and so I'm a huge fan of Patrick Mahomes. but he's not always going to be there, and the Chiefs may not always be that great.
No.
So you bring in an institution like that, thinking that it's going to be, you know, glory days forever, but that's not the way that this works.
No.
And so short term, you might see some benefits, but what about the longer term cost of such a decision like this?
You made a good point. I mean, as Tom Brady said during his roast, the Chiefs had 50 years of mediocrity and 5 years of excellence. So there is something to be said there. Vance, I appreciate you coming on and bringing your perspective on this thing. I've heard from what I'm hearing from, you know, some of my former colleagues, sounds like they've got the votes. We won't know for sure until Tuesday. But if folks want more information, if they want to connect with you, they can find you at VanceGinn, that's GINN.com. And, of course, if they want to reach out with the AFP, they can find them at AFPKS.org, correct?
Yes, that's right. And also Kansas Policy Institute, it's kansaspolicy.org. You can check out information there as well.
I love KPI. They're a wealth of knowledge. Vance, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate you, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much, John. Have a great evening.
Nick, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thank you for sticking around.
Good evening, John. How are you?
Fine, thank you. What can I do for you, sir?
Very well. Hey, I thought that was the best monologue I've ever heard on your show, first of all. I wanted to say that
real
quick.
Thank you. Hey, that's very nice.
Absolutely. The state, I don't think, should be in the business of gambling our tax money, especially when
how is the state gambling it? Because they're going to put a bond out there, and a private entity is going to buy the bond. So the state's really not taking any risk here if the bonds...
Well, just rewind what that individual was talking about before. The government should not be doing this type of stuff, in my opinion. And we have charismatic leadership that's pushing it so hard when we just need to stick to our principles of limited government, individual liberty, and all the stuff that we talk about.
Oh, I agree with that.
So we can win elections and protect the sanctity of our republic for our posterity. I mean, we can talk about the details all day long, but I'm talking about the principle, deep down to the bone principles, and I think that this is just kind of the wrong road. We did. Anybody who voted for SB 84, you know, that was totally ridiculous. This is, in my opinion, another wrong move, just like the Panasonic deal and even the NBAF for all things considered.
I agree with you on both of those.
I appreciate your show.
Thank you, brother.
I appreciate what you're doing, and I look forward to seeing next week's action. And I enjoyed seeing you last night with Representative Estes and Congressman Jim Jordan. So God bless you, John.
Thank you, Nick.
Have a good evening.
Appreciate it. Well, and I did tell you where I'm going to be on this issue, and I'll tell you right now, I've made a decision. I support the issue if they bring the Broncos to Kansas. That's where I am on this issue. If they bring the Denver Broncos to Kansas, I'm all in. So if that's on this issue, I told you I'd pick a side. That's my side. Bring the Broncos to Kansas. So, I know. It's not quite what you were thinking. Nathan, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thank you for sticking around.
Hey, John. This is Nathan. How you doing?
Fine. Thank you, sir.
This is Nathan Price, the guy from Facebook. I've always been heckling with you.
Oh, yes. I love good interactions on social media. They're the best.
So I got a mixed opinion on this, and you might think this is an interesting take. And that's that if they're going to do this, I say we go all in and do it big. We got to build a mega dome, something to rival Las Vegas. You know, if we're going to spend the money, let's do it right.
We don't have to spend the money. The bondholders are going to spend the money. You know, I still love the idea of doing an interim committee and really studying this thing and then running it in January and letting. But at the I do think there's something to be said about waiting too long, because you know some of these states have got a lot more money. I know, for example, Texas annually has a $1 billion slush fund to entice business to move to the state. $1 billion a year just sitting around that they can lure business to move to Texas. And, you know, if we wait around too long, you know, they may lose them, which is why we should get the Broncos, which is why we should entice the Broncos to move to Kansas. I'm going to stick with that. That's my plan. You get Denver here, and I'm all in. Nathan, thank you, brother. I appreciate the call. Shelley, I know you're on the line, but we're just up. That music means I'm up against my top of the hour break. Don't forget, coming up in the next couple weeks, Congressman Jim Jordan. This is an incredible lineup. I am so blessed to have this lineup coming up. Congressman Jim Jordan, Charlie Kirk from Turning Points USA, and Tucker Carlson. We'll also have Congressman Ron Estes with us. I mean, we've got just an incredible lineup coming up in the next couple weeks. You don't want to miss it. In the meantime, carry on, fellow deplorables.